evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. The government of South Sudan denies spying on journalists and civil society activists.
We've been able to establish that between 2015 and 2017, the South Sudanese government had communications intercept technology that had been bought from an Israeli company called Verint and was used by VivaCell Network, a telecommunications company.
And the South Sudan NGO Forum condemns the killing of an aid worker in Unity State.
I will take proper action to media coordinates with the state governor and the deputy governor and the people on the ground so that the issue is resolved.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesperson for the South Sudan government says his government uses surveillance technology to pursue what he calls criminals. Michael McQuay disputes Amnesty International's report released Tuesday, which says the government of South Sudan is responsible for intercepting phone communications and carrying out physical surveillance without proper legal safeguards. The report says this has had a chilling effect on government critics, creating an environment of intimidation and repression for journalists and human rights defenders in the country. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Amnesty International investigated the government's surveillance tactics for more than 2 years by conducting dozens of interviews in Juba, which involved journalists, human rights defenders, former detainees of national security, telecommunications companies, as well as surveillance experts around the world, among others. Sarah Jackson is Amnesty's Deputy Regional Director for East Africa.
We find that the government of South Sudan, through the National Security Service, known as the NSS, has been responsible for abusive surveillance in the country. That's surveillance without appropriate legal safeguards. And that this has had a chilling effect on human rights defenders, on journalists, many of whom courageously continue their work despite these risks, but have to be very careful about how they speak and to whom they speak in what way. So we see a climate of fear, a chilling effect, and of self-censorship.
The report says South Sudan's government also conducts physical surveillance through a network of informants present in hotels, NGOs, the media, and private security companies, especially on human rights defenders. It notes that civil society groups are required to obtain authorization from the NSS before holding events such as press conferences and workshops, a process that increases the likelihood of monitoring. Jackson says South Sudan's government has used Israeli technology to monitor private telephone conversations in the country.
We've been able to establish that between 2015 and 2017, the South Sudanese government had communications intercept technology that had been bought from an Israeli company called Verint and was used by VivaCell Network, a telecommunications company operational in South Sudan at the time.
Jackson says her team contacted other phone companies in South Sudan, including MTN Telecommunications Company. She says a former employee confirmed to Amnesty that MTN employees installed a box for intercepting phone communications, adding that it is a requirement for operating in South Sudan. Jackson says tapped phone conversations have been presented in high-profile court cases in South Sudan, and that former NSS detainees said they had phone call conversations recounted to them during interrogations, which she says is problematic in a place like South Sudan.
It's a problem because of the context in South Sudan and because of the nature of the abusive practices of the National Security Service, the NSS, the way in which the NSS has been responsible for illegal detention, for torture of detainees, interrogations, and the impact that this has had on the right to privacy, the right to be free from torture, the right to freedom of expression, association, and assembly.
Ben Gideon, the commissioner of South Sudan's Human Rights Commission, declined to comment to South Sudan in Focus today, saying he had not read the Amnesty International report. Government spokesperson Michael Makwei denied allegations of widespread surveillance in South Sudan, insisting that the government surveillance equipment is used to track criminals.
When you talk of the government of South Sudan or the security organs acquiring such, these are usually acquired for detection and in pursuit of criminals. Those who commit offenses, they are usually pursued, and this is how they are tracked down. These instruments are all over the world. There is no country in this world we have no such equipment. I don't know what is particular about South Sudan that the so-called human rights organization decides to write and say we are curtailing the freedom of expression.
Amnesty International contacted the Israeli company in question and obtained documentation confirming the sale of surveillance technology to South Sudan. Jackson says her team also repeatedly contacted the government to get its input on the report without success. Makwei, who serves as South Sudan's Minister of Information, Telecommunications and Postal Services, says he was never contacted by Amnesty International to contribute to the report.
There is nobody else who is in charge of information other than myself. Who is that government? What is that government official? Who is that government official whom they contacted? If they had anything, they should have come to my office. I'm ever available.
The human rights organization is calling on the South Sudan government to immediately halt the practice of digital surveillance until proper safeguards are put in place, which include ensuring such surveillance is only used for legitimate and necessary reasons, that it does not violate the right to privacy, and that human rights defenders and journalists are not disproportionately targeted by surveillance. It also calls on the government to reform the National Security Act of 2014 and bring it in line with international standards. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs has condemned repeated attacks, including the killing of aid workers and looting of relief aid. The South Sudan NGO Forum also condemned the killing of an employee of a local non-governmental organization known as Joint Aid Management near Bentiu, the capital of Unity State, last month. Armed youth in Warab State's Tonj East County also looted the store of World Food Program last month. For VOA News, Daniel Maring reports from Juba.
The South Sudan Humanitarian Minister Peter Mayen condemned an attack yesterday by armed youth in Warab State, Tony East County, on a UN World Food Program humanitarian convoy delivering food aid to people displaced by intercommunal fighting in the area. Mayan says the government will not tolerate any forms of abuse against the humanitarian workers in the country.
I will take proper action to meet and coordinate with the state governor and the deputy governor and the people on the ground so that the issue is resolved.
Santino Sholgarang, deputy coordinator for Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Town South, East and North Counties, says armed youth forced the humanitarian convoy to stop and upload all the food at Langchuk Village in Town East County.
There were trucks that were carrying food to Romy Center for the vulnerable people. Those trucks, they were being stopped by the youth, and the food was ordered to be uploaded down.
Garang says the food was meant for people displaced by recent intercommunal conflict in the greater Luanjiang area. Garang says the state authorities are in contact with the local leaders in Tong East County to try to pursue the armed youth to return the food they stole. But Mariala Kut, the executive director of the Dipang Thik County, says local leaders tried to intervene without success when the armed youth were stealing the food.
We tried to intervene, but the armed youth neither listened to us nor understood our humble request. After they succeeded in offloading the food, they distributed it among themselves.
Mayan says the government will protect aid workers and ensure they have free access across the country.
Our goal is to make sure that humanitarian workers are protected, apart from delivering the humanitarian services and humanitarian access is granted across the country.
In a press release issued yesterday, the South Sudan NGO Forum said It was sudden and concerned by the killing of an aid worker near Unity State Capital Bintiu on January 30, 2021. The statement said a South Sudanese employee of Joint Aid Management, or JAM, was shot dead by unidentified people while returning from work supporting vulnerable families in nearby Gwit. Another aid worker from JAM was also injured in the attack and has been receiving treatment, according to the statement. The NGO Forum says aid agencies across the country are, quote, horrified by attacks on aid workers, particularly coming at a time when humanitarians are working to scale up, respond to food insecurity, flooding, local violence, and the COVID-19 pandemic, end quote. It is said insecurity affecting aid workers not only affects the victims directly, but also those relying on life-saving assistance. The statement further said, quote, the South Sudan NGO Forum calls for all stakeholders and parties to ensure unhindered access to those in need of humanitarian assistance and the necessary protection and security of humanitarian workers, end quote. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
At least 14 people were killed and 8 others injured during a renewed fighting across villages in Sudan's South Darfur region over the weekend. An eyewitness say armed men in military uniform attacked and burned down several villages and looted property. Sudanese officials say they will deploy more troops in Darfur region following the withdrawal of peacekeepers from the region last month. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Eyewitnesses in South Darfur state say the violence continued for 3 straight days. They say men wearing military uniforms attacked more than 10 villages in East Jebel Mara in the state, killing 14 people, including 3 women. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from near to the town of Central Darfur, eyewitness Adam Rijal, the official spokesperson for Darfur internally displaced persons, says the attacks on civilians in Darfur have increased in recent weeks after the joint United Nations and African Union peacekeeping mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, left the area. He says the decision to end the peacekeeping mission was a mistake and that he and others repeatedly warned the international community about what would happen if UNAMID left.
How can they attack unarmed civilians who are living in remote villages? These people are lacking moral and humanities. Citizens are peacefully living in their villages, but yet they are being attacked, killed, raped, displaced, and burned down their homes. Above all, their property is looted and left with nothing. This situation needs a collective response.
The UN Security Council ended the UNAMID mission in December last year after nearly 14 years. 2 weeks ago, intercommunal violence broke out between the Falata and Masalit communities in West Darfur State, leaving more than 80 people dead and more than 100 others wounded. Rijal says civilians in Darfur are no longer safe if the transitional government refuses to intervene and protect them. He describes the Sudan's transitional government as weak because they have not made the right decisions or taken decisive actions about ending the conflict in Darfur.
Bashir is still ruling this country while he's hiding. The current members of the transitional government are his supporters. They came and took over the revolution objectives and they are now dominating the country's institutions. What kind of government that doesn't have a solution to resolve the ongoing conflict in Darfur? They are unable to provide citizens with protection and even they are not able to protect themselves.
Abdul Mahmoud Hussein, who works with Al-Amar Charitable Organization for Development in Al-Janina of West Darfur, describes the humanitarian situation in the area as a tragedy. Speaking via messaging app from Al-Janina town, Hussein says civilians, including IDPs, are suffering and need an urgent humanitarian intervention. He says his group could not leave the town due to insecurity.
Currently, we are staying confined in one place and all roads are blocked. No one is allowed to come in or go out. Markets are closed and anyone who opens his shop will be fined. There is no proper security, prices are high and people are unable to move anywhere.
Sudanese Security and Defense Council held a meeting on Tuesday in Khartoum to discuss the general security situation in the country. Speaking to the media shortly after the meeting, Sudanese Defense Minister Yasin Ibrahim said officials resolved to strengthen security in all unstable regions, including Darfur. He says the government is committed to resolving all tribal conflicts over land and cattle grazing.
The council was briefed on the general situation across the country with much focus in conflict regions in Darfur and South Kordofan. We also listened to reports from delegations that were deployed into different affected states. The council therefore has taken a series of precautionary measures aimed at calming the tensions in those areas, avoid further future conflict and ensure urgent solutions for a better future for our citizens.
However, Minister Ibrahim could not elaborate on what he means by precautionary measures. Ibrahim called for what he termed as a unified cooperation between citizens and the government as means to end conflict in Darfur and other parts of the country. He also praised traditional leaders and council of the elders for what he called their patriotic role in restoring reconciliation and peaceful coexistence among different communities across Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a tribal council in South Sudan says more needs to be done for a credible elections in the country. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many languages do you speak fluently?
I have a minimum of 5 languages. I speak my mother tongue, that is one. 2, I speak English, I speak Luganda, I speak Swahili, I speak Acholi.
I speak 5 languages, that is the Kakwa language, Lugbarati language, I speak English, and of course Kiswahili, and the Lunyoro language. Those are the main languages that I speak fluently.
There are 2, English and Kinyarwanda. Because sometimes I feel like when I'm with this person, I can be able to speak with him or her fluently. And when I'm with that one, I can't be able to speak fluently.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A tribal council in South Sudan known as the Jiang Council of Elders says the transitional government of national unity is not ready to usher elections in South Sudan after the transitional period. The spokesman of the Jiang Council of Elders, Aldo Ajo, says preparations for elections are way behind schedule. He says the unity of South Sudanese, regardless of their differences, is pivotal for a lasting peace in the country.
This message is not isolated. It is in the lips of every Saudi. You interview me and you get interview so many others. They will tell you, oh, this peace is really going. It doesn't belong to us, to us as a Jiang Council. This is a message from all South Sudan, from everywhere, from all the regions that have decided, Equatoria, Barangay, and Upper Nile. They decided that we are one country on the condition that we have the federal system of government.
Given the polarization that has taken place in South Sudan, it is an open secret. If the country goes for elections, some candidates will not be able to campaign in areas that are not their home grounds. How would you hold election in an environment where people are afraid to go and campaign?
Now I recommend this measure to be taken. First, we want to see that the army is put in place. 2, we want to see that national security is put in its own place for everybody. 3, we want to see that the law enforcement agency and the judiciary have to be organized in order to implement democracy and the rule of law. And we want to open up, we are asking this country to be open up in order to have freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of everything. Things have to change before elections. That is what we say.
Uncle Aldo Ajo, what you are saying are accepted international standards when it comes to elections. But in South Sudan, the army is a amalgamation of tribal militia. And most of these militia are only loyal to the leaders of their groups and not to the country. How would you ensure that such army can be professional during elections?
Now, together with the agreement has said that you actually gather big militias together, train them together, sort it out, and transform it into the national army. And this is what the agreement is saying. And these people are not doing this. Do you expect us to keep quiet?
And if the government is not doing it, how do you see the prospects for a credible election in South Sudan?
No, election can be peaceful if the changes are made. This transitional government must make changes favorable to democracy and the rule of law. That's what we are saying. We don't want to carry all this mess to elections. What is the environment of elections?
Yes.
Right? If you don't see it, that is something else. That is what is always addressed. So freedom has to be addressed first, and then you go down to establish democratic institutions and institutions that concern economic, social, and all this. And you open up for liberties and democracy. And you actually enforce the law as the measure to stop anybody spoiling the country. You know very well. And these ones are in the agreement. And they are taken up by national dialogue. There are recommendations and resolutions. What do we do? Why do we not commit to this? And why the leaders do not commit to this? We say if they don't commit to this and do it, they are actually up to going back to war.
I watched one of your video interview with a journalist in South Sudan, and you were proposing that IGAD, African Union, and the United Nations should oversee the elections. Is that still your position?
That is not my opinion. It is the opinion of the national dialogue. It is the resolution from the national dialogue that the election commission will be national and will be held by people who are neutral. And elections will have to be supervised by people out there. The IGAD is here, and AU is here, and UN is here, and they have got what they call evaluation and monitoring committee, which is run by them. This government is run by a body. And that is the connection. That is the connection, because what we are implementing and how the government is going to change is through what we have decided, which is being supervised and being seen operative by the IGAD, AU, and UN. How do you deny them? We are not, it is not a new proposal. They are here in the form of GIMAC. You know it. There is no new thing I'm saying. I'm talking within the frame of the agreement and the frame of national dialogue resolution and recommendations. There is nothing. I'm not doing something without. This is the fact. Because the same people who are contesting will not supervise elections properly.
That's Aldo Ajo, spokesman of the GN Council of Elders. He spoke with me from Juba on Monday.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
We'd love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a song about the historical town of Nasir by Gordon Kong.
Belga view head to loin remala Bandin Bekawaida Shan Wida Shan Jinumdi Yesel Mamni Jacob and Yellow Take a yin one come lay a kunel one in the young bell Wida take a yin one Jaga come lay a kunel
We've been listening to Gordon Kong with his song about Nasir. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank you.
quiet.